now more than ever, people need to go within and plug into that cellular memory, plug into divine source, detach as much as possible from the matrix. A lot of these people that have all these abilities, who have celestial star ancestry, they're operating not only throughout this cosmos, but in higher planes, and they're working against the Draco Empire. Photonic energy and the cosmic rays will activate our higher centers. And it's incumbent upon us to ride that frequency wave. Hello again, everybody. This is James Bartley, and you are listening to Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars. Today, I will talk about what we've accomplished thus far in the Cosmic Switchboard Show, and what we plan to do in the future, the plans we have in store, the kinds of shows we plan to bring to you, the kinds of information we plan to bring to you, and we'll also talk about the cosmic wars themselves. Our podcast is called Bartley's Commentaries on the Cosmic Wars, so I thought I would talk about some of the cosmic wars as we have developed information over time from a number of sources. In the recent past, Linda Moulton Howe has been putting out information about ET wars, ET conflict, and other people have been talking about the same subject for some time, so I thought it's a good time to bring these issues up, and we will talk more about this going forward. I will also talk about the importance of reincarnation. There is a school of thought that says reincarnation and learning about one's past lives is pointless, it's nonsense, it's a distraction. Bollocks to that, pardon my Anunnaki. There's a lot one can learn about oneself through reincarnation. I'll get into this more as the show goes along. I'll talk about the trends as we at the Cosmic Switchboard see them, what it portends for the future, and we'll also talk about the latest deaths in Hollywood. It seems that every once in a while, the collective conscience, the collective psyche, is given the shock and awe treatment by one or more, and sometimes they go in threes, well-known musical performers, entertainers, musical artists, actors, actresses, etc., they start dying. And one has to wonder if the deaths are due to natural causes or if they're due to some kind of public sacrifice. So, with that much being said, let's get underway. It's been a fabulous several months since we got the Cosmic Switchboard Show going, and I have a lot of people to thank for that. My partner Kylie, who was the one who inspired me to do the podcast, one fine day she asked me, "Why don't you do a podcast?" And I said, "Why not?" Had no idea what doing a podcast entailed, the amount of work it takes, the effort it takes to, you know, vet and contact and get these guests to agree to come on for an interview. Sometimes getting a hold of these guests, just getting an email combo with them, is like finding hen's teeth. And I've been on the other end of the stick, folks. People have reached out to me to go onto their podcast. And sometimes, I hate to say it, but I just couldn't be bothered. I would cop this attitude, "No, I just want to be left alone." Right? And of course, someone around me or some muse speaking to me through the ether says, "Well, you want some cheese with that wine?" So, don't misunderstand, I'm not complaining. I think that doing this podcast has been a creative outpouring. It has been a challenge, and it's been a labor of love. And without the help of a lot of people behind the scenes, my partner Kylie, my colleague Wolfhawk, and a number of other people, friends from around the world who have reached out to me and suggested certain guests, suggested certain topics of discussion, well, all of that comes together to make what I believe is a very interesting podcast. And we have loyalty to our listeners. It is a mutual beneficial process having this podcast and having our friends and colleagues from around the world write guest articles on occasion, because we don't see ourselves as separate and apart and above our listeners. We are all one. We are all pulling the oars in the same direction. And I'm sure to some degree or other, we all have a similar outlook, a similar mindset. Not that there were one homogeneous collective hive consciousness, far from it. We are all individuals. We all have our own unique dreams and visions of the future, of how we see ourselves in the future and our contribution to this great awakening, this great shift that is taking place. So right off the bat, I want to thank all of you, our dear listeners, who have shown us encouragement, love, support. We have gone through a lot of challenges, a lot of attacks on the webcast, a lot of attacks on the website, a lot of interference, but we've managed to overcome all of these challenges. It's not the destination, it's the journey. We become by overcoming. And I want to thank all of you. And there's so many of you out there, but you know, I just need to mention a few people by their first names. Shelley, Bill, Sarah. So many of you have been very patient, very understanding, very encouraging. And we love all of you. And we feel that pull from you, that pull that says, come on, let's go, let's take it and run with it. Let's hit the ground running. You fall down, pick yourself up, dust yourself off, keep marching on. We'll get there. That's the whole idea. We're on the march, folks. So thank you, one and all. There's so many of you to thank out there. And it's a labor of love. The Cosmic Switchboard Show is a labor of love, and I can't imagine doing anything else. I remember years ago, my friend Helga Morrow, a world-class psychic, by the way. For many years, she did the psychic hotline thing, and a lot of people kind of roll their eyes when they hear that. Au contraire, some of these psychic hotline companies are very serious about what they do. They put their prospective psychics through a screening process to make sure they really are psychic. And Helga Morrow was genetically enhanced while she was in her mother's womb at the 8-month mark. She was genetically enhanced by her father's colleague, who was a geneticist, for the express purpose of making Helga smarter and also making her more psychic. Boy, howdy, did that pan out. It turned out years later, Helga heard her parents having a terrific row. Her mother was screaming at her father. It's like, what did you do to me? Why did you let them do this to me when Helga was still in the womb, right? She heard this terrific argument between her parents, but the upshot was that Helga became super psychic. I think she would have been super psychic anyway. She's a triple Scorpio, according to people who are familiar with astrological issues, and she is quite psychic, and she told me years ago, in fact, she told me at this conference in Philadelphia, I think I mentioned this before, in the Peter Moon interview, which just came out, that I was slated to give an interview, rather a lecture, for my late great friend, Dr. Carla Turner. I was giving a memorial tribute on her behalf. I kicked off that late 1990s conference in Philadelphia with a tribute for Dr. Carla Turner. And I just happened to have my table in the exhibition hall right next to Helga Morrow's table. And Helga told me, she gave me like a free, spontaneous, off-the-cuff reading. And this happens when you have very gifted friends, that they just kind of tell you things as spirit moves them. And Helga told me during this spontaneous reading that one day you will become a central comm link, if you will, a central point of information being shared with the world, right? This was just at the dawn of the internet age. I don't even think I had a computer at the time. My first computer was a 486. I literally walked away after turning it on because it took a half hour to boot up. That's a whole nother story. But anyway, this was before the internet age really got underway, and I had no idea we would have the means to have this instantaneous communications around the world, very much in Jetsons-like fashion. Anywho, she says to me, you will be putting out information, valuable information, all over the world, and people will hear it, and people will learn from it, and people will send you information back. It'll be a two-way thing, mutually beneficial to myself and to the listeners. And boy, howdy, was she right. I had no idea that one day I would be doing a podcast. And the thought never occurred to me. So it's a labor of love, and I want to thank all of my listeners out there and all the people behind the scenes who make it possible. I also want to talk a bit about what we're going to be doing in the new year. I mentioned on our Facebook group, The Cosmic Switchboard, that we will be taking questions from our listeners and the members of our Facebook group. And those of you that are connected to me on Twitter, etc., you're included in this as well. Please submit questions to us, and Kylie and I will read the questions. You can use your real name, you could use your initials, you can use only your first name, whatever you're comfortable with. And you can ask these questions, and we will go through these questions. And if we can't answer these questions or don't have the wisdom to answer the questions, we will find someone who does have the wisdom to answer the questions. Remember, wisdom is knowledge gained largely through experience. There's a difference between someone being intelligent and someone being wise. There's a lot of book smart people that are being excreted by the universities who are as dumb as a box of rocks. All they're good at is excreting what the, pardon my Anunnaki, excreting what the brainwashing universities and schools have taught them. I'm telling you, if the medical schools taught these people that insecticide is good for children and good for people, these people would believe it. So anywho, we will be doing questions and answers. You can contact us through the website, thecosmicswitchboard.com. You can also send us emails to thecosmicswitchboard@yahoo.com. You can send us questions through our dedicated Facebook page, The Cosmic Switchboard. And also, you can find me on Twitter, CosmicSwitch29, I think it is my Twitter account. So please come up with your questions, and we'll answer them on the air. And thank you in advance for your participation. Now, these are some of the guests we're going to be bringing to you in the future. And we've already had what I consider to be a great stream of guests. The Jorge Martin, the great Puerto Rican investigator, UFO investigator. Just had Peter Moon on last week. Laura Leone, quantum holographic kinetics practitioner. Lynn Williams, so many people, Mike Patterson to talk about Sasquatch. All my guests have been outstanding, and we're justifiably proud to have brought them to you. And what we're going to be doing in the future is bringing similar types of guests on board to talk about ETs, UFO experiences, to talk about surface level aspects of the New World Order, and to talk about healing, energetic healing, to talk about naturopathy, talk about community living, proper community living, proper sustainable living, not the sustainable Agenda 21 blah, but real living and the ability to sustain oneself when things go pear-shaped. So we're going to have guests talk about those things. We're going to have guests come on and talk about the folklore from around the world. We have made an effort to bring guests who talk about UFO hotspots from around the world, the aforementioned Jorge Martin. We've had Andrew Hennessy come on to talk about the UFO hotspots in the Gore Bridge, Falkirk area of Scotland. And we will be having Mary Joyce come on to talk about North Carolina, a renowned UFO hotspot. And lots of surface level shenanigans going on there, as well as underground shenanigans. And you'll find out more when she comes on the show. She also talked about the wee folk, the little people, as described by the Cherokee. We're going to have guests come on to talk about the wee folk from different parts of the world, the little people. We're going to have people talk about Sasquatch. We're going to have people talk about the folklore of the Banshee, Ireland, and subject matter like that, because we feel it's important to have institutional memory, if you will, of our past. A lot of things that have passed on as myths, and remember the term myths has been changed. Mythos used to mean narrative truth, but due to the malign influence of the powers that be, nowadays when people hear the term myth, they think of something false or fantastic or unreal or unbelievable. Quite the contrary. And so we're going to have people talk about the folklore from different parts of the world. So we remember, folks, it's all about remembering who we are, where we came from, and what our destiny is, and how each one of us can make a meaningful impact. Each one of us, in our own right, can make a difference and help this awakening process that we're undergoing, help this great shift move along at a faster pace. And we can do that. We're doing it individually, we're doing it collectively. And I feel that it's important that we plug into our past, because there is no past, there is no future, there is only the eternal now. And this is why I was going to talk about, and I might as well talk about it now, the importance of reincarnation. We're going to have guests in the future talk about their past lives in Atlantis and talk about their past lives on other worlds, other star systems, higher dimensions. There is only the eternal now. At this exact moment, we have numerous, indeed countless, counterparts of ourselves coexisting in parallel realities, other times, other timelines. And these are merely different frequencies, different expressions of reality. Multiverse comes close to describing what this reality, the totality of this reality, is all about. But there is only one reality. There's only one thing and countless manifestations and expressions of this one thing. And multiverse is as good a description as we can have. But just remember that all your counterparts in past lives and parallel lives and future lives, they are coexisting in the eternal now. They're just in different frequencies, different bandwidths, if you will. And as time goes on, more and more of you are plugging into these other realities. And time as time goes on, more and more of you are streaming in, to use an internet term, streaming in not only information from your oversoul, your higher self, but also from your counterparts in other worlds, other realities, other timelines. These are all part of your collective group soul, your collective soul mind, if you will. And we stand to learn a lot from our counterparts. Indeed, some people, because of their ability to phase shift, their ability to time shift, and I believe with some people it's an innate ability, they came here into this current incarnation, and within their morphogenetic resonance blueprint, within their very DNA, is encoded the capability, the innate capability to time shift, to jump timelines. And often as not, well, at least sometimes, deep black elements of the military that have advanced technology, that are into the weird science game, they identify such people, locate them, and in a MyLab fashion, they begin utilizing them as assets in time travel operations, Stargate operations, deep space operations, so on and so forth. I'll talk more about that when I get to the bit about the extraterrestrial wars. Because some of you out there took part in these cosmic wars. Some of you have already started to remember bits and pieces of your past, quote-unquote, lives as an ET or a higher dimensional ET. Some of you took part in the Orion Wars. Some of you were incarnational infiltrators. You had intentionally chosen to incarnate into the Draco Collective. You had intentionally chosen to incarnate into the Anunnaki, into the reptilians, into the more negative, warlike reptilian groups. And not all reptilian beings and not all reptilian groups are negative. Some of them are quite spiritually evolved. My dear friend Laura Leone, she was taken to a planet full of very good, spiritually evolved reptilians. They do exist, and some of them have helped us. And I've spoken to a number of people over the years who told me that they've come back into this incarnation to make amends for what they have done in past incarnations as a Draco or a reptilian. And I do believe that they helped to seed, if you will, DNA morphic resonance into these civilizations, into these cultures that were service-to-self type cultures. And during their time in these cultures, and sometimes it was more than just one incarnation, sometimes they incarnated a number of times into the Draco or into some of the more warlike ET races out there. So not only did they imbue into their offspring and future generations that were spawned and descended from themselves, but they reincarnated back into these bloodlines that they have spawned that have this higher dimensional ET component, this higher dimensional spiritually evolved component. And that's what I call an incarnational infiltration. And a lot of us have done this also in our earthly lives. Some of us incarnated in the past into quite warlike civilizations, tribes, empires. I've said many times before, I've helped to expand many tyrannical empires and regimes on the surface in the past. And we can all learn from this. So, again, it underscores the importance of reincarnation. There are those who, like I said, are dismissive of the whole concept of reincarnation and say that it's a distraction, it's a waste of time, but these people don't know what they're talking about. So we're going to have people come on to talk about their past lives in Atlantis, talk about their past lives slash future lives slash parallel lives, in the Sirius system and other star systems. And they've all agreed to come here, boots on the ground, ground crew, to anchor and hold higher frequencies. And even as we speak, many of them are streaming in intelligence, information from their higher selves, from their oversoul, from their extended ET star families. Because we are the sum of all of our parts. Some of you out there have had incarnations as felines, feline warriors, lion, humanoid warriors. Some of you have had incarnations as Andromedans. Some of you have had incarnations as reptilians, as Draco, as mantis beings, as different types of ETs, and they all come together. And you still have within your morphic resonance blueprint, your morphic resonance field, the information from all those past lives. So you have the potential. Always remember this. You always have the potential to reactivate and access those innate metaphysical abilities, as well as the know-how and the wisdom, the star knowledge, if you will, that goes with it. A lot of these negative ET groups and the deep black elements of the military enthrall to the negative ET groups, right? Working for the negative ET groups. They seem to know how to access these memories. They seem to know how to access these innate capabilities within contactees, abductees, my labs. And they use it to further their own agenda, the negative ET agenda, which basically encompasses the negative deep black military aerospace agenda. I like to think that there are factions of the deep black military and or aerospace or private ventures, if you will, that are not under the control of the Draco Empire. I like to think that, and I think that's the case. I do believe there are elements out there that have acquired their own technology, advanced alien technology, by hook or crook, or through remembering their past lives and remembering where they buried or hid some of this stuff, or how to access some of this stuff. I just had Mike Patterson on the show a few weeks back, and Sasquatch is our elder brother's elder brother, elder sister. They are our elders, and they manifest all kinds of metaphysical abilities. They can open portals, they can manifest, they can demanifest. Well, some of you have those abilities as well. You may not be able to call upon them on command. Sometimes you manifest these abilities in a spontaneous fashion. And sometimes you can, with intentions and working with your energy body and your energy fields, you can make things happen with good intentions. We know that there are negative people out there that through bad intentions and through the manipulation and the misuse of energies and ritual magic, what have you, because ritual magic can be used for good or bad purposes. Just you have to be careful what kinds of ceremonies, what kinds of things you invoke, because I believe some of these incantations are defaulted to always pull in the same negative entities. So one has to be careful which disciplines, which spiritual traditions they follow, right? Like a lot of the Native American, a lot of the Aboriginals, they're very scrupulous about what they do. They know that there's very dark entities out there that are interdimensional, that inhabit many planes, and planes that coexist with ours, dimensions and planes and realms that coexist with ours. Bernard Gunther, who you'll be hearing from in our next interview, what a fantastic interview that was. He's coming on this Friday night. He talks about the dark aspects of shamanism and how all true shamans, all true medicine men, medicine women worth their salt know that there are all kinds of negative entities that inhabit different realms, different dimensions, and that these beings have the means to impact our own dimension. And malignly influence people in our dimension, on our world. So this gets back to the whole point about learning who we are, learning who or what our key past lives were, and as time goes on, because some of these people have this innate time-shifting, time-hopping capability, some of them are actually starting to catch up with future timelines. They're starting to interact with some of their future selves. And some of their future selves are a little bit further down the track, some a lot further down the track. So all these future selves can be allies. They want what's best for us too. I know that if I could look back in time and I can go back into a past timeline and I see myself or a counterpart of myself stumbling along, making all these stupid mistakes, right? I would do what I can to help that person. I don't want to completely violate their sovereignty and their free will, but coming at it from an oversoul perspective, I would leave little clues and not so little clues, because I want my past life counterparts or my earlier timeline counterparts, rather, to not have to make the same mistakes that I did. Sometimes, unfortunately, we only learn by making these mistakes. And only after we make the mistakes, the light bulb comes on and we go, ah, that's what that was all about. I mean, I wish there was a better way to learn some of these things, right? I wish there was a better way to learn without having to go through all this wailing and gnashing of teeth, but sometimes that's what we have to go through. But I would like to spare my earlier timeline selves some of the grief and some of the crap that I went through, that's for sure. Because there's better ways of learning, I'll tell you that. Okay, very quickly about this whole concept of future trends and these recent deaths. Okay, I'll take the recent deaths first. Some of these actors and actresses, they're getting old, they're going to pass away at some point, but it just the timing of these deaths is what is suspicious to me. George Michael, Carrie Fisher, you know, count the letters in George Michael's name, you know, do the gematria on it. I haven't done that, but if you just go by the numbers of letters in their names, Carrie Fisher, same thing. Carrie Fisher had done a roasting, a public roast of George Lucas, and she said some interesting things. I bet you can find this on YouTube somewhere, but she referred to her Princess Leia role in the Return of the Jedi movie, when she was basically kept as a slave by Jabba the Hutt, made to wear exotic skimpy clothing, and was chained, and was basically treated as a sex slave. She made some interesting comments in a roast of George Lucas, which maybe she was putting a message out, maybe she was just trying to be funny, who knows. But I'm going to find that video of her doing that, if it's available. Let's see if there's a full text of it available in some newspaper articles that have been written about her, you know, in the wake of her passing. This has been referenced, this roast she made of George Lucas. And if I didn't know any better, it sounded like she was almost talking about MK Monarch issues. Would it surprise me that she knew something about that? No, it wouldn't. Her mother was Debbie Reynolds. Her father was Eddie Fisher. She was born into a celebrity Hollywood music family. I remember years ago watching the outtakes, what were they? They were screen tests of some of the actors who wound up becoming the main cast for the original Star Wars movies. And there was this screen test of Mark Hamill. And Mark Hamill was saying, I'm trying to remember the quote correctly, but it was in reference to Princess Leia, and it was all about mind control. And Mark Hamill was saying, in his role as Luke Skywalker, of course Princess Leia knows about mind control. She's a member of the royal family. Or words to that effect. I darn near fell out of my chair, right? And now, of course, there's all these stories coming out about George Michael, about what he may or may not have been involved in. And these things happen in threes, you know, not too long ago, you know. I mean, again, these guys are getting older, these gals are getting older. But now they're openly talking about how Princess Leia, excuse me, Carrie Fisher, had a drug relapse and may have been high as a kite the last month of her life before she had this alleged heart attack. You know, similar to Prince, who died not too long ago, they're already doing things to kind of sully Carrie Fisher's character, right? And a lot of these Hollywood types, they've got so much dirt on them. They've put them in so many compromising positions. These sewer scum Hollywood directors, movie moguls, etc. They're some of the darkest, most evil people that have ever walked this mud ball we call Earth, right? They're just evil, evil people, and they make the budding stars and starlets go through horrific things if they want them to attain stardom. So we have that going on. Is there going to be another person dying in Hollywood or in the music industry pretty soon? Who knows? We'll find out. But, you know, we've seen in the past that they use the excuse of pharmaceutical drug addiction, pharmaceutical drug overdose, see Heath Ledger, see Whitney Houston, et cetera, et cetera. Of course, who controls the pharmaceutical industry? Pharmacopoeia, sorcery, right? Janice Barcello talks about this, what pharmacy, pharmacopoeia really means. It's a form of sorcery. My late friend George Andrews wrote a classic book, an anthology called Drugs and Magic, and each chapter was devoted to a different culture's traditional use of hallucinogenic plants for ceremonial purposes. And it's not uncommon for these ceremonial power plants to be utilized specifically to get in commo, to establish a comm link with interdimensional or extraterrestrial beings. All right, so when you hear the word pharmacy, think about that. So a lot of these Hollywood types are supposedly overdosing, but look at Michael Jackson or Elvis Presley, for crying out loud. He was stuffed to the gills with a cocktail of different types of pharmaceuticals. So anyway, just keep that in mind. Have we seen the end of these deaths? Probably not. We're probably going to see more overdoses, more heart attacks, and more mysterious deaths amongst the Hollywood elite. And now let's get on to the subject of trends going forward. I talked in previous commentaries about the financial system and how a lot of analysts are saying that 27 is going to be a very rocky year financially, and as we go forward, things will get worse and worse. We knew this was coming at some point. Now, what's interesting is the saber rattling. We already know about the saber rattling towards Russia, but as many of you know, they've been rattling sabers towards China. Oh, China's building an airbase here. Oh, they're dredging a deep water port there. Oh, they're becoming warlike and aggressive. Never mind the 400 or so U.S. bases that are surrounding China. Just as the case with Russia, they surround Russia with bases, and they have all these allies in NATO and whatnot. And then they bitch and moan about how aggressive Russia is becoming. It's the old victim-aggressor mentality, right? And so anyway, there's a lot of saber rattling towards the Chinese. Well, what's interesting is the Chinese have been doing the U.S. a favor, and that is they've been buying up all these treasury notes, basically refinancing the U.S. national debt. Now, if they keep poking and prodding the Chinese, pissing them off, the Chinese may just say at some point, no mas, okay? We're not going to buy up these treasury notes. You can get stuffed, which is going to cause a major knock-on effect as far as the financial system is concerned. Maybe that's what they want. Maybe they want to goad the Chinese into, well, amongst other things, not buying any more U.S. Treasury notes. For many years, through the Saudi petrodollar recycling scheme, the U.S. Federal Reserve, not really the U.S., it's a private corporation, of course, the Fed came up with a scheme to have the Saudis buy up all these, there was the petrodollar scheme, look it up on the internet, right? It was started during the Nixon administration. Coincidentally, it was in the Nixon administration when the U.S., the Federal Reserve went off the gold standard, right? So the petrodollar scheme has been keeping the U.S. dollar afloat. And also you add on to that the Chinese helping out by buying up all these treasury notes. Well, the petrodollar is on its last legs. The only thing keeping it relevant is the illusion of money, as well as the prospect of ever more wars. Remember, is part of the project for the new century scheme of things. The U.S. should be prepared to fight multiple major theater conflicts simultaneously. That's what these neo-con sewer scum had planned all along, was not to just destroy all these countries along the North African littoral, Syria and Libya and whatnot, but they want to expand that throughout the world. This Uber example of urban renewal, destroy everything and then remake it in their own image. And lately, it's been allowing these countries in the Middle East and elsewhere to be overrun by Wahhabists, Salafists, and jihadists. That's what they've been doing lately. And China is a whole different kettle of fish. Like Russia, China has a professional military, and they have missiles, they have submarines, they have air wings. So let's see what happens. If they try to keep provoking China, and of course the leadership of China is by and large made up of a bunch of reptilian Draco hosts anyway, and the dragon bloodlines run strong through the Chinese leadership. And the problem is, the worst possible combination of all time was this Chinese kind of collective hive consciousness combined with the communist ideology. That was like a perfect storm. And before anyone starts bitching and moaning, I'm part Chinese, okay? So I can comment about this. Don't anyone whinge to me about racism, okay? Ain't buying it. Homie, don't play that. So the Chinese have, by and large, had at times a fatalistic attitude about things because, you know, so much of what goes on and had gone on in China for so long, for centuries, was wailing and gnashing of teeth, suffering, famines, floods, and it got even worse after Mao was installed to run China after, and I may talk about this sometime in a commentary, where the U.S. deliberately stabbed Chiang Kai-shek in the back, right? He was their big hero during the war against the Japanese, but then, of course, as we've seen over and over again, they turned the tables on him, deprived him of weaponry, financed and armed Mao's communists, and then, you know, Mao took over mainland China, and hundreds of millions of people died of starvation and other forms of unnatural death since then. And now they want to poke a stick at China, which is like poking a stick at a hornet's nest. Maybe they want China to divest themselves of these treasury notes and thereby precipitate a financial collapse. Then they can, in true victim-aggressor mode, say, oh, look what the Chinese did to the world economy. Not our problem, not our fault. It was them, right? The communist Chinese, when they're the ones that created the communist Chinese in the first place. So that's a trend to keep your eyes on. There's a lot of American military exercises that take place near China. Think of the Team Spirit exercises with the South Koreans. I think they were called the Cobra Gold exercises in Thailand. They were called that for many years. I don't know what they're called now. All these training exercises with the so-called allies of Asia. They've been trying to stir up rebellion for a long time in the western provinces of China, once again stirring the ethnic Chinese who are Muslims in western China, right? I mean, think about Brzezinski's Ark of Islam directed against the Russians. Well, the same thing has been done vis-a-vis the Chinese. So that's a future trend I'd like you to keep your eyes on. Okay, the extraterrestrial wars. And the extraterrestrial wars are real, have been for some time. Many of you out there have memories of being involved in these wars, in the long wars in the Orion constellation. And I have yet to listen to these interviews by Linda Moulton Howe. I will take the time to listen to them to see what her sources are saying. Some of her sources in the past have set her up for a fall. I think of the times when her sources, I don't know who they were, whether they're a military or civilian, provided her with pictures of the so-called drones, which looked to me like 3D models, right? A weird-looking craft that were, you know, photoshopped into pictures. And then I think of what Bob Emenegger and others did to her in the past when they got her into believing that sometime down the track they will show her actual film of the alien landing at Holloman Air Force Base. Depending on your source, the landing took place in 1964 or 1968. I'm satisfied that it did happen. Holloman Air Force Base in New Mexico is just one of many military bases where this kind of routine nowadays has been for some time. Routine daily interaction has gone on with non-human life forms, both of the extraterrestrial variety, subterranean variety, as well as the interdimensional variety. And there's overlap between the three. They're not mutually exclusive. Some races and some beings are all three. They come from other worlds in our cosmos. They are interdimensional, have the interdimensional capability, and they also establish subterranean bases here on Earth or undersea bases on Earth. And so back in the day, these film producers, and along with some shadowy elements of the military, may have been OSI, the infamous Air Force Office of Special Investigations, regarded by some as the Air Force Stasi or Air Force Gestapo. And the producers of this documentary, they were going to turn it into a documentary, were saying, we're just waiting for the word from the government to go ahead and we're going to have you, you know, break this story, break this documentary, break this actual film footage to the public, right? And they kept stalling Linda Moulton Howe out, stalling her out. And then a while later they said, oh, the government said the time's not ready to reveal the existence of aliens to the public, and the whole thing died a natural death. Classic bait and switch to make a UFO researcher spin her wheels and expend all this time and resources on something that was never meant to be anyway. That much being said, in the past, Linda Moulton Howe has had very good sources that she's developed within the military intelligence community, and she's come out with very good information about aliens and different ET races and whatnot. Now, she was the one who first broke the story about cattle mutilations with her award-winning documentary, A Strange Harvest. So I always give credit where credit's due. And just so there's no misunderstanding, I did not mean to imply a moment ago that Holloman Air Force Base is one of those places where humans and aliens interact on a daily basis now. There are a number of those places, Edwards Air Force Base, China Lake, and these are all highly secure areas, either on the surface or underground or both. Dulce in New Mexico, places like that. But at the very least, in 1964 or 1968, there was an alien landing, and apparently the military gave back to a certain ET group or groups alien bodies. And that was what was filmed secretly, or not secretly rather, but filmed by the military. And it was that film footage that was supposed to be part of Linda Moulton Howe's documentary, which never came to pass. Anyway, getting back to the whole concept of extraterrestrial wars. We've seen this in the anecdotal testimony of certain people that I know personally. Diane Johnson, one of the early MyLabs to come forward with her story, she lived actually quite close to China Lake. She lived in the Ridgecrest area, if memory serves, of the high desert of Southern California. She talks about a time when the ship landed, the alien ship landed. These Greys were on board. They took her onto the craft, the Greys did, and then a reptilian came on the craft, and the Greys were terrified. The way Diane described it, something to the effect like, it was as if the Admiral came on board. The crew, the Grey crew, became terrified at the mere presence of this reptilian, and this reptilian, for whatever reason, took a swipe with its claws along the chest of one of the Greys, ripped his chest open, and the Grey dropped dead. And this scared the other Greys even more. And I've heard of similar stories from others. Misha Johnston, many of you know her in the field. I've known Misha for many years. I used to visit Las Vegas on a regular, semi-regular basis and do a lot of field investigations. There are reptilian bases not too far from Las Vegas, and there is, of course, the Nevada test site about 2.5 hours away. So I would spend a lot of time in Vegas back in the day, and Misha told me that on one occasion she was laying in bed, and one alien group came along and wanted to abduct her, and just before Group A hauled her away, another group of aliens, Group B, came along and started arguing with the other group of aliens. The first group of aliens were saying, "We got here first," and the other group of aliens saying, "No, she's coming with us." And she heard all this telepathically. I'm reminded of that scene in the Woody Allen movie when Woody Allen's gang goes into a bank with the intention of robbing it, and there happens to be another gang there that was intent on robbing the bank at the same time. And then Woody Allen asks the people in the holdup, the bank customers and the bank staff, to, you know, raise their hand. You want to be abducted, you know, you want to be robbed by us, you want to be robbed by them, right? And so here's Misha Johnston laying there, and two different groups of aliens are arguing over. Something similar happened to Betty Andreasen. Betty Andreasen was with her husband, if memory serves. This happened at a drive-in theater. You remember drive-in theaters, folks. Don't know what we're talking about, the under 30 crowd, but back in the day, there were drive-in movie theaters where you'd watch movies sitting in the comfort of your own car. And this happened at night, and Bob Luca and his wife Betty Luca, formerly Betty Andreasen, were watching a drive-in movie. One group of Greys came along and abducted her, and then another group of Greys, the group of Greys that usually interacts with Betty, re-abducted her, took her away from the first group, right? And we've heard this from other people. There was a well-known alien abductee in Southern California, Jesse, I forget his name. He was part, one of the abductees hypnotically regressed by Yvonne Smith. Yvonne Smith is a well-known alien abduction researcher slash hypnotherapist, and she hypnotically regressed Jesse, and hopefully I'm not mixing his story up with another person's story, but if memory serves, Jesse took a trip to Florida And then he got abducted by the group of ETs that were interacting with Ed Walters, the late Ed Walters, who took all those fabulous pictures of the so-called Gulf Breeze UFOs. And Jesse, if memory serves, he said, yeah, it wasn't the regular group that interacts with me or abducts me. It was a whole other group that I'd never seen before. And sometimes that happens, where a person is accustomed, if you will, to being abducted by a certain group of ETs. Suddenly they start hanging around or dating or spending time with another alien abductee who has interactions with another group of ETs. And suddenly that one person who got to know the other person, suddenly the ETs the other person interacts with is abducting the person that they just gotten to know. Because the ETs express an interest. Oh, who's this person interacting with? Who are they having a sexual relationship with? Who are they hanging around with? Let's abduct them and suss them out, right? And sometimes they have conflict. Outright conflict. The aforementioned Linda Moulton Howe has video from, it was a southern state. There was a young boy describing the video. He described it as a war between two different flying saucers, and the flying saucers were shooting at each other. I can't say they were flying saucers. They were kind of lighted objects, let's say, kind of elliptical shape, and they were chasing after each other, and they were shooting light beams at each other. And then there's the famous video from the space shuttle. I forget, I think it was STS, Space Shuttle Mission 48. I can't remember for sure, but it was film footage taken from the space shuttle that showed all kinds of large craft in space above the Earth's atmosphere. And one of the craft took evasive action as a photon torpedo-looking thing came out from the Earth's surface. There was a bright flash on the ground, shot up into the sky, out in the beyond the atmosphere, with the intention, it seemed, of blasting this big alien craft. And right before the energy ball got there, the alien craft made an evasive maneuver and escaped. Whether that was ground-based weaponry from humans or military or ETs, I don't know. But it underscores the fact that there is conflict going on. And then you look at the evidence from throughout our solar system. Our solar system looks like a battlefield, where there was once a very large planet. Some people call it Maldek. Other people have different names for it. But it was apparently a very large planet that was blown to smithereens, which begat the asteroid belt. And even in the Native American lore, the Ojibwa Indians, they talk about their creator god, Nanabush, warring against, get this, the lizard people. Surprise, surprise. Nanabush, their god, fighting against the lizard people. And then you look at Greek mythology, and you heard me earlier say the true meaning of myth, mythos, this narrative from the original Greek. Mythos, narrative, truth. In the Greek mythology, the gods, if you will, the Olympian pantheon, for all we know, that could be the Anunnaki pantheon, they were always warring against each other, always intriguing against each other, always using proxies, these superhuman, supermen, superwomen, demigods, half god, i.e. alien, and half human, heroes and heroines, as proxies to war against each other. So, and also you look at the ancient texts from the subcontinent, from India. They're constantly talking about warfare in the ancient Indian texts between the gods. So the concept is not new. Now, I've been in the field for quite some time, developed my own sources, people that I have vetted, people that I know for a fact are telling the truth. And what these people are telling me is that they have, not all of them, but some of them, they themselves have taken part as foot soldiers, if you will, in these cosmic wars. And some of the things they tell me, it seems to be right out of Starship Troopers, except for the big arachnids going around chomping on people. And what they're describing to me is that they're part of these large interplanetary fleets, intergalactic fleets, piloted by humans, apparently from Earth. And these human military that have these craft, they are in league with certain groups of aliens, and they are the military and certain groups of ETs they're in alliance with are warring against other ET races. And we're hearing stories about full-on combat. And I don't know, and we haven't determined if it has to do with gaining territory, like, say, this alien race out there or races happens to live in star systems or planets coveted by the military alien alliance from Earth. And I believe a lot of these, like I said earlier, military operations that work in outer space and work in other dimensions and do the Stargate thing and have their own fleet. Some of them are very large craft. Some of them, at least some of them, are, for all intents and purposes, extensions of the Draco Empire. They essentially work for the reptilians, the negative Draco. They may think they're autonomous, but many of the people in their chain of command, many of the higher-ups, are themselves hosts, hybrid hosts for reptilian and or Draco entities. And so they're actually just proxies. They're just doing the bidding of their Draco reptilian masters, whether they realize it or not. So I don't know ultimately who this military ET force is working for, but in at least one conflict that I'm aware of, they are warring against this ET race. So what's been described as tall, kind of gray-looking aliens, very slow afoot. They don't seem to move very fast. And these military ET forces have invaded certain areas of the cosmos, attack them, if you will, attack their bases, attack their strongholds, and these aliens have responded in kind. They have likewise invaded space or territory in the cosmos controlled by the military, or at any rate controlled by other groups. And there are alliances, federations, if you will, counter-alliances, of course there are. When you hear people like David Jacobs so say there's only one kind of ET, a gray and a hybrid mix between the grays and the humans, and some of the hybrids are like 100% human, and some of the hybrids look part human, part gray, that's nonsense. There's a bewildering variety of ET races, not only grays and human hybrid variants of grays. There are a variety of different ET races. And in one experience, an abductee can witness several different groups of ETs working in unison. To be sure, some of the latter are servants or genetically engineered slave races of one or more other races. But the fact remains, people will see, sometimes in the context of one experience, several different races. A mantis being, or beings, reptilians, Dracos, grays, tan-colored beings, Nordic human beings. I know of cases where there are actual parleys, conferences, peace treaties between, say, factions of the Palladians, the Zeta Grays, and reptilians. And they're all hammering out some kind of understanding, some kind of peace treaty or some kind of treaty of alliance, who knows what for. But they have treaties, they have conferences, they have meetings, they have alliances. Some people are brought to alien bases, alien worlds, alien installations where they're propped up on a stage, and then they look around them, and there's like a gallery of different kinds of E.T. races right out of Star Wars. Like rows and rows and rows of different E.T.s, some quite large, some not so large. Variety, bewildering variety of different races, different species. And they have alliances with one another. Of course they would. Not all of them are aligned, but many of them are. And sometimes these alliances have conflict or warfare against other E.T. races or E.T. alliances. We've seen this over and over on Earth. Why shouldn't it happen in the cosmos? There's even conflict between the races that live within the Earth. So I just wanted to throw that out there, that there is conflict, and I'm in combo with several people that have been utilized as foot soldiers in these cosmic wars. They are essentially my labs. But that the term my lab should not define one's existence. When someone says, yeah, I've had my lab experiences, or I'm a my lab, that doesn't mean, and it should not mean, that they go along with the my lab agenda. Why would they go along with being enslaved and mind controlled and utilized as a minion to advance the agenda of the Draco Empire or some other negative marauding ET race? So, as much as possible, folks, let's not identify with being a my lab or, I hate the term, super soldier. One can have my lab experiences, but still claim their sovereignty and their sovereign nature. Okay, I am a sovereign being, you can say, but I've had some my lab experiences, but they don't define me, right? Because some of these my labs have interactions with several different groups of ETs, not only in this dimension, but in higher dimensions. And some of those operations are completely standalone operations with certain groups of ETs. And in truth, in a higher dimensional sense, some of them have standalone operations where they don't even work with good ETs. They may parlay with good ETs. They may have conferences with good ETs, but they're regarded by these good ET alliances and groups as being sovereign beings. They're not looked down upon as being mere humans. They're looked at as equals. And when they're in a certain state of being, a certain state of mind, which is a latent capability within many my labs out there, many of you operate at multiple different dimensions simultaneously. Okay, we've reached the end of this week's segment of the Cosmic Switchboard Show. Thank you so much for coming on board, all of our wonderful listeners out there. Thank you for supporting us. Thank you for being members. We still have that special going on for a limited time. For $95, you get a full year's membership. If you're an existing member, likewise, for $95, you get another year tacked onto your current membership. And also, you can have a consult with myself or one of my colleagues about your alien abduction experiences, my lab experiences, computer help or computer knowledge, and information about nutrition. And I want all of you to have a wonderful, happy, fabulous new year. Let's make it a great 2017. Let's ride this frequency wave. Let's turn the tables on the would-be controllers of this world. Their time is up. They're the ones behind the eight ball, not us. The tide has turned. They're handling this energetic shift very badly. It doesn't matter how many chemtrails they put out. It doesn't matter how many frequencies they pump out to dumb down and sicken and try and turn everyone into cyborgs or automatons. It doesn't matter. Too many people are slipping through the cracks. Too many people are coming to a realization of their own full metaphysical potential, but from a heart-centered, spiritually grounded place. You've been listening to Bartley's commentaries on the cosmic wars, and all of you have a great, great 2017.